What's up, Kodakata Squad? On this episode, we have Chris from Bento Club, who is an English teacher in Japan and has a YouTube channel where he cooks different dishes in Japan. So we talk about his 10 years of experience with the language, along with what it's been like living there. If you want to support us, you can join our Patreon or our YouTube membership for exclusive videos. And it takes a lot of time to put out the content, so any support helps us out tremendously. But as always, hope you guys enjoy the podcast.
Yeah, so Chris, yeah, can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
Yeah, so my name's Chris, also known as Bento Club. I've been studying Japanese for around 10 years now. About two or three of those years were immersion-based learning. Now, not so much. I mean, just living in Japan, I'm, you know, constantly immersing in Japanese language and culture. But I've been living in Japan for about 3 years now. Spent two of those years deep in the countryside. Now I'm pretty close to Tokyo, just teaching English and living the life.
So you've been studying Japanese for like 5 years before, or 5 or 7 years before you came to Japan?
Yeah, so I studied all throughout high school, all throughout college. I finished college a little early, within like 3 years. So, and then after I finished college, I, you know, had about a year period of just straight immersion right before I came to Japan. And I want to say, like, I was super into the whole like immersion-based learning when I was in Japan. But honestly, at that point, it's been like 2-3 years, and I kind of just wanted to enjoy living my life in Japan, traveling, doing all kinds of stuff.
I see. So do you think that's like separate from immersion? Like, is that contradictory?
I wouldn't say it's contradictory. I would just say it's different. Because when I was still in like college and, you know, really on the computer watching anime and the news and reading books every day, it was just different in the sense where, you know, I was like actively trying to learn new words and improve my listening abilities. Whereas being in Japan, it's more of just like, this is happening on a daily basis, so I got to use my Japanese, kind of like sink or swim. Another reason why I would say it's different is because like when you're kind of like watching anime and stuff like that, it's like all listening and stuff like that, which is great. But like after those 3 years of immersion-based learning, I was kind of like, okay, I want to just like use all the Japanese I know. So I was like really active and trying to get into like clubs and stuff like that. I use Japanese at work all the time with my coworkers. I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu in Japan as well. And everybody I train with is Japanese. So, you know, it's just different.
I see. So I guess like when you first got to Japan, what was that like? Like how good were you at Japanese? Was there anything you struggled with?
So the first time I came to Japan, it was right after high school. And so I studied 4 years in high school and I was like the top of my class. And I was thinking like, oh, my Japanese is so great. You know, I'm just going to go to Japan and talk to everybody I know. And then I went to Japan and I was kind of just like, oh my goodness, my Japanese sucks so bad. Like I can't even hold a basic conversation with anybody. So the first time I went to Japan, yeah, it was pretty discouraging, but at the same time, I was like super motivated to, you know, start college and start studying Japanese, taking Japanese classes. And just to say, like at the time, I didn't know anything about like AJAT or any kind of like immersion learning. So I was just thinking like, oh, I want to take these classes and get really good.
And so the next time you came was after college when you came to start teaching English?
So I've actually been to Japan like a few times before I moved to Japan. So that first time I was just talking about after high school, but also like during college, pretty much every year I was in Japan. I went with a friend once, and then I also studied abroad in Ehime, and I also did a little bit of research in Kyoto. So I was kind of like all over Japan.
But one thing that you mentioned that I think piqued a lot of our viewers' interest is that you didn't really know about AJAT or immersion-based learning the first time, right? So at what time did you kind of learn about immersion learning?
Yeah, so I believe it was like my second it was my second year of college. One of my friends was like, hey, do you know this guy named Matt versus Japan? He's like really good at Japanese. And I was thinking like, oh, he can't be that good at Japanese. Let me see his Japanese. And I was just so like mind blown. Like, this guy has to be like half Japanese or something. Like, how did he get so good at Japanese? And so I just went through his YouTube channel, watched all of his videos. And ever since that day, I've just been super convinced that like immersion learning is it. Like, that's how you get good at Japanese.
But I guess like when you came to Japan for your job teaching English, did you have any, did you notice anything like lacking about your Japanese then? Because you're in a new prefecture, I'm sure they have like a special dialect there as well. Or were you able to get around with no problems?
Yeah, so when I moved to Japan, I had already had like 2 or 3 years of immersion under my belt. So I felt pretty comfortable listening and reading to everything that I saw. But with that being said, the whole time I was in America, I kept telling myself like, okay, it's time to start outputting. It's time to start outputting. But I never ended up doing it. So when I came to Japan, it was a little rough having conversations with people. I could still communicate with people, like get my point across, but there were definitely times where I was like, oh, I should have said this, or I should have said it like this. But I just kind of gradually got better at it the longer I stayed in Japan. That's not to say like I'm super good at it right now. I still make mistakes every day, but it definitely gets a lot easier.
Right. And you mentioned how you were kind of prepared when you did come here to work because of the amount of immersion that you had put in. So I guess at the time you did arrive, how many hours of Anki, for example, did you end up doing? The classic basis of measurement.
Yeah, so it's a little different with me since I had like a lot of classroom time and I had like a lot of Japanese friends as well.
Right.
So by the time I started Anki, I already was, I would say, pretty decent at Japanese. And so on Anki, I had about 10,000 cards on top of what like I already knew. It's kind of hard to like put a number on like, you know, how good I was at Japanese. But I would say when I came to Japan, I knew probably around like 15K words. Yeah.
I see. And how would you describe your ability today now that you've been studying for 10 years?
Yeah, I would say I'm good enough at Japanese to know that I'm not good at Japanese. What I mean by that is I can still communicate with people fine, but I think because I learned so much about like immersion based learning to the point where like every time I speak, I'm always super self-conscious of what I'm about to say. So I would say I make small mistakes here and there, and I'm always like, oh, I should have said it like this. But I would say like on a daily basis, I can pretty much get any point across that I want.
Right. And so do you feel like you want to get better, or are you like comfortable with this, the level that you're at?
I want to get better with the things that like interest me. For example, I mentioned that I do jiu-jitsu in Japan. I still want to learn like more jiu-jitsu terminology. I like to read the news and stuff like that. So maybe learn how to, you know, read the news faster, be able to understand it a little bit better. But like just looking at Japanese as a whole, I would pretty much say just like just focusing on the things that, you know, interest me. It definitely took a lot out of me personally to like kind of back away from Anki because I saw myself relying on it way too much. And to the point where I was like, I don't know, I was reading like really, really weird novels and like just like words that I didn't even know the meaning of in English were popping up in the book. And I was like, oh, got to make an Anki card for this. Of course, like this is when I was like already kind of at a high level. But it was just like I reached the point where I was like, what am I learning this for? It doesn't really like influence my daily life and it doesn't really have anything to do with like my goals. So that was like the point where I was like, you know what, I need to just stop making Anki cards and kind of just like focus more on, you know, life in Japan. But with that being said, just living life in Japan, I feel really comfortable with everything in my bubble. I mentioned like doing jiu-jitsu. I feel comfortable doing that. I feel comfortable going to work and stuff like that. But at the same time, if I like branch out, let's say it's like politics or something, I'm just like, you know, like every now and then a word will come up and I'm just like, I don't really know what that means. I just got too comfortable in my bubble. I just don't want to dedicate the rest of my life for Anki.
I see. So, but I guess like now you're pretty used to life in Japan. You said it probably doesn't even feel like you have to really study Japanese that hard. But one thing that was interesting was that you had experience of living in different places in Japan, like the Inaka and now closer to the city. Like, how would you describe that experience, like the difference between living in Inaka versus the city?
Living in the countryside, everybody is super friendly. People really go out of their ways to help you, like, you know, especially because that was my first time, like, actually working in Japan. There was so much to learn. People were always, like, more than enough, you know. They would always, like, for example, there was this one lady, I was lost, so I went into her shop and I said, hey, how do I get to this place? And she literally closed down her shop just to help me get to where I had to go. Wow. And I've never experienced anything like that before. And of course, like, since it's countryside, everybody's a lot closer. So I would say, like, one of the downsides to living in the countryside is, especially as a foreigner, everybody knows your business. For example, I would go to work on a Monday and one teacher would be like, oh, so I heard that you went over to that part of town. What were you doing there? And like, who was that person you were with? Or like when I'd go to the store, I would see my students and they would say like, oh, what are you buying for dinner tonight? And I was just like, get away from me. Like, let me, you know, mind your own business. So there was like good and bad parts of living in the countryside. Overall, I would say it was a really great experience. You really got to experience, like, I don't want to say like Japanese culture, but I don't know, people are a lot more willing to like have you participate in like events and stuff like that. But like moving on to the city life, I absolutely love how they actually have like a lot of the foods that I grew up eating in the States. In the countryside, there was such limited selection of food. So I rarely went out to like eat at restaurants. I had to learn how to cook myself. And by the way, when I went out to the countryside, I had no cooking experience at all. Just, you know, I had to learn how to cook because there's no restaurants. But now living in the city, I can pretty much buy whatever I want to buy and eat the foods that I want to eat. So I'm definitely putting on a little bit of weight, but I like the convenience of living in the city. Everybody just kind of minds their own business, and it's definitely a lot different than the countryside.
I see. Yeah, it looks like the countryside has a little bit of a stalker problem. You hate to see it.
Yeah. Right. But,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting, though, seeing how you kind of lay out the pros and cons, because the countryside definitely has its merits of, like you mentioned, the really nice Japanese kind of hospitality versus, I mean, the downside of everyone is always on you. They're like, Chris, where were you here? Where were you there? Why were you there? I can't imagine that. So I guess now that you have, I guess you have the convenience of the city, but the hospitality of the countryside, is there one that you would say maybe you miss the countryside, or you think convenience is all the way to go? Like, this is it right here.
One thing I really miss about the countryside is just like the fresh air. Growing up in the States, I was pretty fortunate to be so close to like a lot of nature, at the same time pretty close to a city. And I loved going out camping and stuff like that. And it's kind of hard to do that in the city now. There's just so many people and so many buildings everywhere, which is great. But I'm also the kind of person that likes to enjoy going on walks and, you know, go camping out in the countryside with nothing but like trees and rivers and stuff like that. Yeah, that's the big one for me.
Do you think you'll want to stay in the city for a while? A couple of years?
I would say at least a couple of years. I want to experience living in the city. I can't ever see myself moving back to the countryside, but I would like to live somewhere where it's pretty easy to get to the city so I can buy all the stuff that I want to buy. But at the same time, kind of a place where I could absorb all of the, you know, countryside air and the scenery and stuff like that, because I really love both.
I see. I guess Japan is the perfect place then, because there are a lot of areas where it's close to the city, but at the same time, you're also very close to the countryside, or I mean, or in the countryside and close to the mountains. So, yeah, I mean, you're set up for success here, Chris. You're set up for success. And I guess kind of going off that too. So, you mentioned that you want to live in the city for a couple more years, but what would you say your whole outlook on living in Japan is? Is it something that you want to go and be in Japan for the full long term after kind of devoting so much time already? Or is it something where you would maybe want to reevaluate, or what are your thoughts?
As of right now, I can see myself staying in Japan for a long time. I don't really plan on going back to the States as of right now, but I don't know. I kind of go through seasons where sometimes I'm like, oh, I really miss this about the States, or like, oh, I can't believe, Japan doesn't have this, or vice versa as well. But as of right now, just kind of when I put all my thoughts in order, I would just say that living in Japan is, it just kind of suits me, I feel like I just fit in, a little bit more here. The things that I like to do, it's easier to do out here. And yeah, so we'll see what happens though. I don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Do you think you'll continue teaching English?
As much as I enjoy it, I can't see myself doing it for any more than like, I don't know, 2 or 3 more years. With that being said, I'm still not entirely sure what I want to do. I just know that like working for a Japanese company is not exactly what I want to, get into. If I can branch out and get bigger on like YouTube and stuff like that, that would be great. But as of right now, I have no problem teaching whatsoever. I love working with children. Every day it's something new. You never know what to expect with the little guys.
Right. Yeah, and I guess like speaking of YouTube, like can you like talk about what you're doing on YouTube and any plans for the future on your channel?
Yeah, so right now I make YouTube videos, just food videos about what I'm eating in Japan to kind of show American people like this is what Japanese food is. I think a lot of people, they think like, oh, sushi and ramen and stuff like that when they think about Japanese food. But as delicious as those two items are, there's so much more about Japanese cuisine that I want the world to know about Japan. So whether it's me cooking or going to a Japanese restaurant, I just kind of want to show the world what I'm doing. It kind of started when I was in the countryside, like I was saying before, and there weren't a whole lot of restaurants. And so I was like, well, I guess I got to teach myself how to cook. And I just went through a lot of like trial and error and, just learning about Japanese cuisine and stuff like that. And I just kind of thought one day, like, hey, it'd be kind of cool to show other people what I'm eating and what kind of foods you can eat in Japan. And so that's how it started.
But yeah, I guess like a lot of our listeners, they're still like maybe not even in Japan, they're like still studying Japanese. So I guess like from your perspective, after studying Japanese for 10 years, what sort of advice would you give to people who are studying Japanese like maybe a couple years into the process?
Yeah, two really big things for me was number one is to just trust the process. There were so many times where I was like, if I learn more words today, then that means I'm just going to get better at Japanese. So I would try to like power through learning like 25 words every single day on Anki. And at the end, it was just a total disaster. Like I forgot most of the words and it was just more stress than necessary. So I would say, set a schedule for yourself. Don't expect yourself to do too much. Do something that's reasonable and just stay consistent as possible. Like consistency is key. And the second piece of advice would be to find things that you enjoy doing. And I know people say this all the time, if you like doing, sports, then maybe you should learn about sports, or if you like watching anime, then watch anime. And just to kind of go like one, to the next level, I would say try to get involved in those kind of communities as well. Maybe you're not at that point where you want to start outputting, but there's like so many resources on the computer where you could see what like actual Japanese people are saying or what kind of stuff they're talking about in that, field of interest of yours. and just get involved as much as possible. And that's really how you get better. It's, you start off with the stuff that you're really interested in, and then you branch out from there.
Wow, those are some really valuable words right there. I think the Korekara squad is going to be really happy with that.
Yeah, Chris, so yeah, at the end of our podcast, we always ask our guests for a Korekara message. And a lot of times it's in Japanese for people who are learning Japanese. But I guess, like, what is your Korekara message to the listeners today?
やってみないと何も分からないので、とにかくやってみて自分の失敗から学びましょう。それでいいかな。
Megan, yeah, nice. And yeah, with that, see you guys on the next one. Peace.